This is Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Time to get embarrassed with us.
This is the beginning of the show.
This is the beginning of Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. My name's Alon.
I am the other one. I'm the other guy.
Jimmy, the other one, Hoffman.
I'm the other guy. Yeah, Jimmy, the other guy, Hoffman.
I'm not Jimmy. That's not Alon. And we are bringing this to you every Thursday at 3 p.m., our website is radiofreebrooklyn.com/LAR, where you can be a sponsor of our show.
Yes, yes, you can.
If you are not broke as a joke and freaking out for your dear life.
If you still have some extra dollars around and you want to give back to the creative community growing here in Brooklyn like a tree grows.
Like a tree in Brooklyn. Know?
Because again, this ain't free. And we don't get paid, but...
Nope.
Costs money.
Mm-hmm.
It's like microphones, and we got like, you know, we're in a basement, and we've got to fight off rats who stave them off with, you know, sharpened sticks, and that stuff costs money.
Sometimes we get weird calls during the recording session.
Yeah.
But,
guys,
you never know.
Very interested in radio, I suppose.
Be it our show directly, where you could be a sponsor, or to the entire collective as a whole. RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/pledge. Your donations are most appreciated and will very much go to a good cause. It's the arts, and we're kind of in a little bit of limbo right now.
We're in a bind. We're in a bind. But you know what? I was thinking about this. In the times of the greatest struggle is where you learn the most, and it's where you get the best art, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make it through.
And we have a really good show for you. It's our 60th episode this week. We had a 60th episode last week that unfortunately...
It was a ghost episode.
It was a ghost episode. But instead of confusing everybody and being like, this is our 61st episode and episode 60 will magically show up. Well, we're just going to be simple and, you know, go down the line. As we do, 60 episodes, what better opportunity than to dig back into some... completely unpredictable audio clips with a guest that we'll be getting to.
Right after these messages.
We're excited to talk to you.
Here in the studio, we have another fellow student from Poughkeepsie Day School that I was lucky to become friends with. Welcome to the show, Nick Zimmerman.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Nick, you went to Cornell, so you went to the school on the other side of Ithaca from
right,
me.
Of the valley, yep.
I was South Hill, you were the West Hill, I believe, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
So was there like a lot of rivalry?
Oh yeah, I was
totally,
Ithaca kids.
Totally.
No,
wait, so
no,
who,
no,
who
actually,
was tougher?
Actually, it's far enough apart that I went over to the Ithaca a few times.
What purpose were you
I mean,
in Ithaca?
I had some...
what on earth could have you had?
Apparently it's gorgeous.
I did have some other friends there too. I had a friend of mine from Red Hook actually.
Okay.
Who was there at the same time.
Really?
It was a year. He's my year, so it was a year.
What was his name?
Zach Terrace.
Huh. I don't know if I know that guy.
Good guy.
Interesting.
Yep. And a few other people out
there. He's on the fence about a lot of issues.
I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of kids from the Hudson Valley, and even so much as our school, there was always acceptances into Cornell and Ithaca. Yeah. So every year there was always at least one or two of us PDS kids who ended up in Ithaca one reason or another.
The gap between the two schools is actually pretty big. I mean,
sure.
You have to like
because
you can't just walk back and forth.
I imagine if you flattened, and you probably know a lot about this, and we'll get to that in a little bit, in terms of the space, in terms of
with the topography.
The topography, it probably would be, in theory, a much shorter trip.
Gorges in the way.
Too many gorges.
Yeah.
So on that note, though, what did you go to school for?
I actually did what's called a dual degree, which is just a double major, but it's between two different colleges. So I studied Asian studies, Southeast Asian studies, and fine arts. Painting,
okay.
But they were not connected. They were just two different degrees.
How did you find the time to cover such complex, more or less very time commitment related degrees?
I didn't sleep a lot.
Wait, you went to Cornell. You didn't sleep a lot,
yeah.
And you're alive.
Somehow made it through.
That's incredible, dude.
Yeah. It was busy time.
It's like the architecture school. I know a lot of kids from there who...
Yeah, I was in that college.
So you did go to...
It wasn't architecture, but architecture, art, and planning. It's all the same college.
Do you feel like there was some of that Southeast Asian art like influence then in your art?
Yeah, towards the latter part when I was doing my thesis, it was definitely influenced by it. I was a research fellow in Cambodia for a summer, and then that kind of influenced me a lot in what I was doing. Doing mixed media stuff, so I love music from all over the world. So actually, part of how I kind of fell into Asian studies as a major was I was already taking all these classes that were cross listed as Asian studies, like music classes that were related to like Indonesian music or Korean music, and so it was just kind of made sense. And I was studying Japanese at the time too. So
you got to go to Japan too in high school.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That was an amazing trip. And I actually lived in Japan for 2 years after college.
That's awesome.
But it's hard to pin it down. But Cambodia was the region that I was kind of focused on most. And I'm still like a huge fan of Cambodian golden era, like 50s, 60s Cambodian music. And just like, yeah, still really
killer Cambodian tunes. And we hear about it all the time.
Yeah.
Like I just can't, people talk my ear off about Cambodia.
Where I get a lot of my music ideas, like I get a lot of inspiration from, if not hip hop and the songs that are sampled in hip hop, songs that are on this site called radio.com. But it's radio with 5 O's.com. It's my favorite website, honest to God. Radio.com.
Well, what is the point of you telling us this?
Because it's a map of the world, and you can listen to music from anywhere in the world, any time in the 20th century. I honestly have no clue.
Wait, what do you mean? Any time in the 20th century? Like you can listen to
Cambodian
music
from the
50s. So is it anything in the public?
But it's submission.
Domain?
It's submission based. Yes. Okay. So people who are a part of the website can contribute music from Indonesia, from Cambodia, from the Philippines, etc. Wow. Anywhere in the Southeast Asian region, and at any time that at least someone has submitted that. So it may not necessarily be the case that you're going to hear something that's Vietnamese from the 50s, but if someone has something that they submitted, then you'll hear it. That's what
my brother could do a show about that. He's got a ton of old vinyl.
Your brother
from
is
Indonesia and other parts of the area.
Were you an influence to your brother's music?
Well, I'm older than him by 4.5 years, so of course when I heard stuff, he was younger and he heard it, so there's probably some influence. But he was a music major, so he took it even much further than I ever did. In terms of his own music, he's got a big vinyl collection. He was just traveling actually and just got a bunch of new stuff. So he's like much more into it. Yeah, I mean, I might have introduced him in part to Cambodian stuff just because I was into it. And anyone who hears it is like, this is amazing. But
what about that music was most interesting to you versus being in Japan for a few years and then you're in Cambodia and that for some reason struck a chord?
Yeah, it's really cool because a lot of it, the stuff that I'm most interested in is sort of 50s and 60s and a little bit of early 70s. And it's kind of a blend of more traditional chord progressions and melodies, but blended with, there's a certain amount of American popular music influence. So there's some songs that sound almost like doo-wop or more like soul. It's also like from the time has some of those influences. It's just still very Cambodian, though. There's like a really traditional vibe to it, like the percussion, the instrumentation. And then there's the fact that like the Khmer Rouge happened and all of the musicians were killed, essentially. So it's like this weird little bubble of time where there's a ton of amazing music And then it was just tragically snuffed out. It's kind of haunting in that way, too. So a lot of, not to take it down.
That's super interesting.
You know,
though.
To me, that it always colors it a little bit because it's these like voices from the past coming over the vinyl.
Well, that's the same reason why when you're a painter, you know, and you tragically die, your paintings are worth a ton more than when you live. In the same way, if Jimi Hendrix had lived out his days and everything he put out in his 30s and his 40s was just terrible, would he have any sort of respect like he does now?
I don't know. I mean,
I'm telling you, if he had,
I would like to think so.
That's what they say. It's better to burn out than they say it's better to burn out than to fade away, man. And it's again, it's not a great thing, you know. As I'm never going to like advocate that someone's going to end their life to cement their fame, but it's the exact thing where you can't get any more.
What Jimi Hendrix has going for him is that everyone knows Jimi Hendrix, and everyone loves Jimi Hendrix. But Cambodian music, you know, it's almost like paying tribute to kind of a lost culture in a way. I mean, it's not lost, obviously, but it's, you know, a big chunk of Cambodian culture was lost during the war. So it's sort of like honoring that to kind of go back and dig it up and give it new life.
When you were in Cambodia, what was it that you were doing work-wise?
I was a junior fellow at a place called the Center for Khmer Studies. I was doing a study on, it was like there are 5 Americans, 5 Cambodians, and 5 French, because Cambodia used to be a French protectorate. Mm-hmm. So we were all there doing independent projects, and mine was studying contemporary Cambodian fine art. So it was like, you know, is there fine art in Cambodia? And if there is, what does it look like? And how is it different from, let's say, like, you know, like the way we think of it in the U.S.? Because I, you know, when you study in art school in the U.S., there's all this theory and it's always within a kind of bubble. And they don't really, you know, it's kind of, I mean, there's lots of international art these days.
But it's mostly Western influence.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of arts coming out of
rubric and stuff. Right?
Right. And these days there's arts coming out of, a lot of arts coming out of Africa, like different parts of Africa. Like I know Nigeria's got a lot of artists, a lot of coming out of China. Cambodia, though, it's very like a tourist kind of art market. So trying to interview local artists.
You were in Cambodia for how many years? 2 years?
No. It was Cambodia. I was there for just 3 months over the summer. And then I went back again when I lived in Japan because I just had friends there. And I've been back. I was there actually for a wedding last December.
Goodness.
So I still have some ties there. But yeah, obviously I wish it was closer.
Right.
How's the grub over there?
Oh, it's good. It's like it's hard to get. Unless you go to somebody's house and they cook it for you, like home cooking, you don't really know Cambodian food. I mean, there's a lot of classic dishes, but a lot of people don't get the full deal, which is a shame because there's some really great food there.
This occasion of which you are here for is this isn't like young Nick Zimmerman, but this is very much like a very, very eager musician, DJ Nick Zimmerman.
Yeah, it's about 13 to 15 years old.
And honestly, when we're doing this show, we are always striving to do as much as we can to dig the oldest that you can possibly find.
Yeah.
And for full disclosure, I did reach out to you, Nick, about what you had, and not really expecting anything other than just like something really awesome. And it turned out that it was awesome. It's from the computer. It's not anything on tape.
Yeah, it probably did exist on tape at one point. All the original files.
What the
gone.
Hell, man? You could have had. They could have had the audio.
Well, those are all gone, man.
What happened to them?
I had
man?
To, like, so I lost everything in 2005. Basically, everything I'd done through high school up until that point,
that
except
sucks.
For like, I mean, I was really prolific at the time. Like, I have a bunch left, but 90% of it's gone. Do you know what I mean?
We wouldn't be here if I lost everything. The show would cease to exist.
I know. It sucks, man.
I mean, you know, people are like, back your stuff up, and you're like, huh?
No, I know. Well, believe me, ever since that happened, it's
that's how it happens.
I'm meticulous about it now, but, I mean, it was a blow. So these were ones that I sent you or ones that I did have saved, or they were on something else, and I taped them back, I copied them back, or whatever it was. They're all post-90s, put it that way.
Coming into this interview, we listened to one of your tracks. It's called Wintry Mix.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So Wintry Mix is really, it's a funny thing back to when I wrote these because, yeah, they're all recorded with the computer, but I sort of like, I had a couple little mics I used, and I used to do this, I used to be really obsessed with like making all of my own drum and instrument sounds and then just having synths. So with Wintry Mix, I remember, it's weird because I remember recording each of the sounds. Like one of them is like a zip disc going in, if you remember zip discs.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is like a sliding door and like a latching sound. It's like I think it's a snare, it's a latch. And then there's some things that were on my desk, like around where the computer was. I just like hit them and record them and throw them in there. So I think probably like, if I don't know, it's often you hear the same sounds in some of the songs because they were like, it was probably hitting the same thing.
I'm feeling the rain and the snow.
Yeah, it was like a shitty, I think it was like December. It was like a shitty snowy day. There was like,
yeah,
that was I think it was like that sample that the lady is, I think, from QVC or some.
Yeah.
It's something like really just inside.
I got like a total Aphex Twin vibe from this song.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very dissonant. Yeah.
It's a big influence of mine. Yeah, dissonant and also like a lot. So the problem with a lot of these is that the levels are really shitty. You know, I don't have the original file. So like you'll notice that like that's way too boomy, that one little that synth that's in there. But
how did you record these tracks?
So I recorded all the individual sound, like percussion sounds and stuff. And some of them I processed. There was a program called Medisynth that would do like harmonics and like weird shuffly stuff to process sounds. I also used some like freeware old school Mac, you know, audio editing. And then I had a bootleg copy of Reason. It was like Reason 1, I think. It was a long time ago. Reason 1, maybe 2, but this is 2001 or 2. Mm-hmm. This one's 2002, but
right.
Yeah, so it's like Reason, which I still use to this day. I like Reason a lot. It's gotten a lot better, obviously. It's not ideal for...
Reason still exists?
Yeah. Reason's still around.
Did you use a Mac when you were growing up, Jimmy?
I used a Mac. The first year I got a Mac was 2005.
Okay.
Or something like that.
Do we know a thing called Kaboom Factory then?
Well, probably not. It's from the 90s, dude.
Okay.
That's an old... I mean, I think that was discontinued.
That's what you said. It was like an old program.
Yeah, that's what I used to use, but in the 90s. I can't remember if I was using it still at that time, but it might have been.
Okay.
But Reason, now I have like Live and some other stuff, but I still use Reason. You know, it's one of those things I'm comfortable with. I've been using it for 15 years.
So before you sent me this whole bunch of songs, these were songs that you listened to before you sent them to me. So you have... Right? You got a chance to preview these before you sent them to me.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't... They're not in a particular theme. I just grabbed, like, a few from a three-year sort of span.
What does it mean to you to hear this stuff for the first time? Since this is not the first time you're hearing this music, and it is effectively ours for the show and for the listener.
But yeah, I listened to them back before I sent them to you just to, like, make sure they weren't, like, that the file was working. But yeah, I hadn't heard... A few of them I hadn't heard, obviously, in many years. I have a pretty clear memory of working on most of them. Some of them, you know, I don't remember exactly when they were from, and the date on them is incorrect because I would like find it and copy it again later from some old hard drive in some cases. So some of them say like 2006, but they're actually from 2003 or something. So when that happens, it gets a little confusing. Sometimes things are renamed, but for the most part, I mean, I remember I chose ones that I had a clear recollection of how they were made and when.
It seems like a lot of these that you're making are, well, you have some time off from your very busy studies. I hope
No, well, it was definitely, I mean, I did use Reason a lot as a procrastination outlet, but
better than going on message boards. That's
better
for sure.
Than hanging out with friends. No. I mean, I don't know. I did most, honestly, like most of the ones I sent were probably on like winter break or like some kind of break from school, but I did do them a lot, you know, while I was in school.
We have one that's also from December of 2002 that you have time-stamped it, at least, called Our Ant Farm. You want to talk a little bit about that before we listen to that?
Yeah. I don't know what the statute of limitations on this, but there's so I was, let's just say...
Don't
just
go, do it.
Friends.
Go right ahead. This won't offend anybody. It
okay.
won't.
Well, I don't want to incriminate anybody, namely myself.
I mean, if you don't have to
look,
say
I'll put
what...
put it this way.
Yeah.
just put it hanging out, way. Hanging out with some folks from the homeland.
The homeland of... And that is Rhinebeck or Barrytown?
Yeah, it's Northern Dutchess. I mean, I don't remember exactly where. This might have been in Barrytown. But anyways, you know, we had some chanterelles, some porcinis, some shiitakes.
Fair
some
enough.
Enokis.
Yep.
And there was a moment where I kind of had, there was a sort of like this clarity of vision. And I just had this like image of all my friends and family working together in an ant colony, like an ant farm. And just like busily digging. And like everyone's just like happy and busy digging. Like a day or two later, I did this. This is embarrassing.
It's embarrassing only for the right reasons as opposed to be incriminating, I suppose, right?
No, yeah, I mean, I was just kidding. I don't care. Well, it was a long time ago.
It was in the days when we were supposed to experiment.
Right, exactly.
With not just drugs, but with music.
and nachos and, you know, all sorts of things.
So much.
It's within the bounds of human decency.
Exactly.
Let's take a listen.
Play it. I definitely felt that farm vibe.
Yeah, good. Glad to hear that.
Colonizing.
It's all worth it.
Like, you know, like that's Ants is always like even that movie Ants, it kind of like.
I was going to say, do you remember that Ants and A Bug's Life came out around the same time?
Of course. You don't know, but this is a thing that studios do. You don't know about this. One studio hears another studio is doing a movie that they put a lot of money into, and they go, whoa, quick, like, make one that's exactly the same that they did. So we can do one. We can get people who think they're going to another movie. And they mistakenly bought a ticket for our movie.
I like to note that Woody Allen voiced the protagonist in that movie in Ants with a Z.
Yeah, dude, Ants with a Z is great. I never saw Bug's Life, but Ants
neither
with a Z. Sylvester Stallone is in, and so is Christopher Walken in Ants. Like, yeah. All these people.
Really?
In Ants. And the bad guy is Gene Hackman. If you go back and you look at all these different 3D movies, the cast they get are nuts sometimes.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of money to sit around doing seemingly what we're doing right now.
to a different degree. Nick, I'm curious. So the chords that you are putting in there in the main part of the song, you were just jamming on a keyboard, basically? Or
jamming on a keyboard, as far as I recall, yeah.
What kind of music upbringing did you have?
My dad's been a huge influence on me in terms of my musical taste. He's really into musics from all over the world. And I studied music as a kid. I played piano.
Okay.
For several years when I was younger, and then in high school I also studied music theory a little bit. I didn't major in college, but like I said, I took a lot of music classes. So,
this is like what I did too. Yeah. I took as many different music classes that I possibly could that was within the means of just like appreciation, like a world music class, for example.
Yeah, I had like a MIDI setup back in like mid-90s when it was really, MIDI just kind of sucks.
Yeah.
There was no real nice way to like put in audio samples, at least that I had. So like you're always limited to the MIDI 100%. So the reason was like this huge thing for me because you could use the MIDI kind of use synths and stuff and sequence it like MIDI, but you have an ability to put in samples. And I was I've always been really into hip hop. It's really, you can't make hip hop on, I mean, I guess you could now, but you can make like trap beats on MIDI. But back in the day, like this is the 90s, so like, you know, and I still hate that shit today, but, you know, in the 90s, it's like, you know, sample basis.
Yeah.
It's still what I do now. So,
no, exactly.
Yeah. So I did have some music growing up, but it was very, you know, I was very lightweight.
I don't know exactly why, but my parents never put me towards anything musical growing up. So I would just say that, like, you know, my musical tastes were founded basically in my dad's musical taste because my mom, I don't remember her listening to
But you never music. Made, like, you never, like, tinkered around on, like, even,
when
like,
I
a
was
friend's
in,
keyboard
when I was
at
in,
all?
When I was in high school, my buddies really used to like metal. I used to go to a lot of metal shows with them. And then they were like, oh, we're forming a band. We want you to be the front man for the band. And the band lasted for, like, a couple of months.
This is the one you talked about before? It's,
yeah, called Bear Cavalry. Bear Cavalry. Best part of the band is definitely the name.
Yeah, that's a good name.
It's a good name. And then when I was in college, my roommate used to use Reason all the time. He was really into like turntablism. And he would do a lot of mixing and a lot of scratching. And he was doing a lot of producing his tracks and stuff like that, and do a lot of hip hop. But he just didn't rap. He's like, he's like, that's not what I'm about. And so he asked me one time, he said, you know, you seem like you would be a dude that could rap. Because you're just, you know, the nature of who you are.
Because of your cadence, just alone. Yeah.
So he was like, do you want to just fool around at some point and try that out? And I was like, sure. So the actually, he still has it. I can contact him somewhere. He has this track. And it was, what was the word? It was all off the dome piece. Like, I didn't write anything. And it's definitely a part about me waiting in line at Taco Bell in it.
Oh, man. That's golden, man. I can't wait to hear the Taco Bell rap from Jimmy Hoffman.
And then, but it's, what's funny about that, and it's actually interesting, is that after that, I kind of liked it. The track was pretty bad, but I liked the idea of it. That's one thing is, like, I know a lot of rappers, I always wonder, like, what's their approach to writing lyrics? Do they write it with a song in mind? Do they just write just, like, stanzas of stuff and then think, okay, I can just, like, apply this later or maybe change it around a little bit and tinker with it. It'll work for this, or maybe this will work for this one, or it'll maybe give me a track this will work with.
Yeah.
But I started writing, like, books worth of just rhymes and stuff like that because I actually did try putting tracks together and stuff like that, and I was dog shit. It was bad.
Yeah, it helps that you gotta find a good combo.
It was one of those things that I don't have any kind of musical background, so I didn't have like a sense of how it should be moving or what I should be looking for. And I knew I could like hear sounds and things, I would find samples, but it was just not, my mind just didn't work that way.
If you're still interested, I'll send you some beats.
I've just been thinking about getting back into it.
Yeah, all right. So well, there you go.
Let's do it, man.
Yeah.
When I was going to try my hand at producing, one of my big influences, of like still a rapper that I really liked a lot in college, was, I still like now, is MF Doom.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's just
one of my favorites.
It's awesome. It takes like a special ear, like at first, to really like hear that, because people hear it and they go like, what is this guy doing? Because he produces too. Yeah, and his stuff is amazing.
It's like the Special Herb series.
But he raps like not to the beat. On purpose. Right, he has his own internal beat that he just like flows, and it's so good. It's so genius. Yeah. And but he constantly will sample Fantastic Four, you know? And, you know, I always went back to the same way of Wu-Tang sampling all those old like Kung Fu movies.
Right.
So I had gone through and I had actually pulled out like a ton of old samples from TV shows and stuff like that. Like in my thought of like, okay, I got these like stocked up so that I can use them. And the one that I had been building, I still remember it, was around this quote from the X-Men animated TV show from the 90s. Remember that? Fuck, that show was awesome.
That was the best.
And it was and it was Omega Red. And I still remember exactly, dude. Wow. It was, because I felt like it was going to like lead perfectly into this like rap that was going to be like boom and like in your face. And there's this part, and they go, what do you want, Omega Red? And he goes, what do I want? What do I want, Colonel? I want to watch the world burn. And then, like, the beat would drop.
Yeah. Wait, that didn't happen?
Well, again, like, the beat just didn't really
the
come
beat
together.
Didn't drop.
It just wasn't.
Well,
just
yeah, let's make that happen, man.
We could still find
that. I love
that. Clip.
I love those old. I mean, yeah, samples make it. You know, like, if you got the concept and you've got everything lined up. I was producing for some people in Tucson a few years ago.
Yeah.
And
that's where you were living, just before here, right?
Right. But I wasn't really, so I was kind of doing something else recently, but back like probably how long has it been now? I don't know, like 5 years, I guess. That's crazy to think. I don't know where I got the idea, but it might have just been I was watching a documentary, but I started just recording. I would just only sample North Korean music from like weird propaganda and just like, and I was like, what are they gonna do? Like, they're gonna attack me on copyright grounds. So
dude, that's
so like
funny.
I made like half a dozen tracks are just only North Korean samples.
That's amazing.
That's super funny.
We gotta take a quick break, and when we come back, we gotta go into some of your raps, because I know we were chatting about rap. I gotta get into them.
Oh, Jesus.
But to take us into the into the next segment, we have to hear this. We have to hear this track that is either from 2003 or 2004, you said?
I think
It
was late 2003.
Okay. So
or maybe summer 2003.
And for full disclosure, it's John Ashcroft singing a gospel song?
Yeah. Yeah, so there's actually an extended version of this. I just gave you the second part.
Perfect.
But, yeah, that's all you need to know.
Weapons-grade asshole.
Weapons-grade asshole. Mm-hmm. Don't miss him.
We have worse things to worry about now.
I know.
Believe it or not.
He was still an asshole even by today's standards.
Well, when we come back, we got more of the world of Nick Zimmerman here on Lost and Rewound.
Radio Free Brooklyn.
Please don't bring us to war. Please. Whatever you do, dude. Just don't listen to that motherfucker, Steve Bannon. I hate to be political here. But...
Wait, so, okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, but how can Steve Bannon be racist if he's hanging out with Johnny Quest and Haji? Oh, wait, is that race, Bannon?
Oh, I see. I see what you did there.
See what the,
We're
at.
We are here with,
I'm right there.
We're here with my old buddy Nick Zimmerman here on Lost and Rewound. It's been really a pleasure having you here, and we're looking forward to more in this next half. To remind the listener, these are all tracks that you produced on your Mac in the early aughts while you were in college.
More or less, I think that's right. There's a... One of the ones that I had sent you might have been just from just before college, like early 2002, mm-hmm. The other George W. Bush one. I never would have imagined they'd be playing on the radio 15 years later. But, you know, they weren't like masterpieces. They were like throwaway songs, but the ones I've got. So that's what we're that's what we're listening to.
Before we get to Crimebeck, because we have to get to Crimebeck, there is something I wanted to ask you, which is sure. that considering your musical proficiency and your interest in making music like this, you must have been collaborating with a number of people in high school just as well.
I did, yeah. I did some collaboration with my friend Isaiah, who's also from Red Hook, also PDS, mm-hmm. PDS guy. I did a few collaborations with him. Some of them were later on. He and Sam Blake, who was rapping at the time, they did a collaboration. They did an album. And they asked me to... I think I was just like, I did a couple of remixes for like sort of like, you know, almost like B-sides for the end of the album. One of them is called the Last Assumption. So Isaiah would play guitar and bass, and he had like a 4-track recorder, so he had them all tracked out. And then I had acapellas of Sam's. I mean, at the time, I was really into like Prefuse, so you can hear there's like some of that kind of like just really choppy, a little glitchy kind of stuff going on.
Right.
And so
I was thinking like Fortet too, kind of to the same.
Yeah, way. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this high praise, I don't, I think when,
the
square
pusher type
it's,
of shit.
It's more chopped than your average remix.
It's more
think.
Chopped
than your average salad.
Yes.
I mean, it's a little, maybe it's a little too chopped, but it's, I was into it at the time. It's embarrassing to hear now, but.
That's what this show is all about.
So this is an exclusive, effectively.
This is a Lost and Rewound exclusive.
This is what Dutchess County sounds like.
These
like chest congestion, never suspecting the clever projection, caused the connection, quick mental dissection. Here's a suggestion, choose a different direction, a new profession, understand your act to go to church for confession. I advance the next session, gain insight that show you the question.
I don't know what there's to be embarrassed about. I mean, I understand the nature of your relation to the song and realizing like what you could possibly do now that's better than that. But for someone who is in college, that's incredible, dude.
Oh, thanks, man.
No, I was thinking the same.
They're really talented. I mean, both Isaiah and Sam are really talented. I was given a lot of good stuff to work with, so that always makes – I mean, hearing it back now, it's like what I hear is like, you know, the levels, like I would mix it better. There's like – there's a lot of room for improvement, and I can't because I don't have the – you know, it's all –
you don't have the only – you don't have the rough.
I should – you know what, though? I should contact Isaiah. Maybe he does.
Hey, yeah.
You never know.
Always happy to have
up the originals.
Yeah, to dig up the originals, bring it back here, and we're always happy to do like live in the studio. We had Eric and Axel do
brother musicians in the studio.
Yeah.
But it's the nature of any artist when you're looking back at your old work.
Yeah,
you're always going to be able to see the flaws much more easily than someone else can see.
Oh, please.
Yeah. You know, because I've had plenty of times where I've come off stage, and I've been like, gosh, I just gave a terrible performance. And I've had someone go, wow, that was so great.
We are our best critics.
I know. Everyone's got different tastes to it anyway. So.
You never did a performance of any of your music. It's all bedroom producing, basically?
No.
So to speak.
I mean, yeah, I never performed. Let's see. No, during this time period, definitely not. I did a couple DJ sets when I was in Japan with a friend, and we played some original stuff then.
That's awesome.
But
How was that received?
It was fun. I was living in a boondocks kind of town, so like small cities, small venues.
Sure.
We played one show in Osaka that was fun. But cool. Yeah, I mean, it was all very low-key. It was just for fun, but never performed at all during this whole period of the sort of early 2000s. I don't know how I don't know who I'd perform for, but also pre-SoundCloud, so there wasn't really anywhere.
How would you have put your music, or did you find a way to put your music up on like a social media variety site or something?
I don't think I did. I mean, Cornell used to have student websites, cornell.edu/people/whatever.
Sure.
Your username.
An internal server.
Yeah, but it was just for me.
Sure.
I never promoted or anything. No, I mean, honestly, probably most of them have never seen the light of day.
There is a track here featuring you and your brother, and your brother mm-hmm. is, for full disclosure, in a band now, Tobo.
Formerly Bobby.
I'm not
Tobo, formerly Bobby. That's like that seems like roots right there. You call me Tobo. You could Bobby, but not Tobo.
So, if anything, right. This is more of a testament to how early his career in music goes. But just as well, the fact that you and your brother are both in sync with the music love and able mm-hmm. to collaborate on this track together. Could you tell us a little bit, please, about Crimebeck?
Sure. So Martin, I mean, just very quickly on Martin. Martin was doing amazing. So, I mean, I learned stuff about music production from him when he was like 13.
That's
and
awesome.
I was 17. And he did a lot of incredible stuff. So I got to get him to send you some early stuff of his. He's probably appropriately embarrassed. But it's good. Ezra's tech is really good, I think. Yeah, so Crimebeck, I don't know what there's to say about this. I guess, like, people know about Rhinebeck now. It's like a destination, right?
It is where Chelsea Clinton got married.
Well, so, yeah, that was basically, like, I haven't been back to Rhinebeck since Chelsea Clinton got married there.
Seriously?
I mean, I avoid it like the plague. I've driven through, if I have to. I haven't been there in probably 8 or 9 years.
And it's not far from me. You're from more like the Red Hook area. Rhinebeck is right next to Red Hook.
Right. I grew up in Red Hook, but I also lived for, like, 6 years in Rhine Cliff. And then my dad lived in Rhine Cliff, and then I lived for 1 year, the final year in high school, he was living in Rhinebeck. So I did have a little taste, and that was when Crimebeck was made. And you know what was funny? So I saw it was inspired, the name was from when I was a little kid. I remember seeing some graffiti at the Rhine Cliff train station. I was probably like 6 or 7 that said Crimebeck. And so for some reason it stuck in my head because it was funny.
It's just like Brooklyn with Crooklyn. It's
right.
Same thing.
Right, except that it's, you know, Rhinebeck. But no, it's funny because Rhinecliff, when I was first living there, was actually kind of, I mean, I don't know, it's Rhinecliff. It's like a tiny little hamlet. But it was a little grimy. Like, I remember saying two crack deals in the middle of the day. And it's hilarious to think of that now because Rhinecliff has also become like super posh. I mean, it was always kind of the Hudson Hamlet. I don't want to say anything bad about Rhinebeck, but Rhinebeck has changed a lot. So nowadays it's kind of like, I guess, a touristy kind of antique store town. But it was kind of becoming that. It's always been a little bit, you know, it's been this quaint sort of old Dutch town for a long time. I mean, forever.
Yeah. No, I remember going on a date at the Beekman Arms, which is mentioned in the song.
Yeah, Beekman Arms. So, yeah. So it used to be just like a quiet, sleepy, quaint little town. And just now it's become very commercialized. As far as I know, I mean, again, I haven't been there in a long time. I hear bad things. So, yeah, this song's about, yeah, it's like kind of a series of inside jokes.
And you are rapping on this.
Yeah. I don't know if I should explain it. Probably not.
Well, listen to the song and maybe you'll give context.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, let's do it.
I guess so.
Exclusive.
Yo, dude, I went through the same thing with Dutchess County.
Yo, R to the H, the I, the N, the E. In Crimebeck, you best step carefully. Idle by the Beekman Arms, then cross the street. Cause yo, cakes from Calico be rotten mad feet. We loiter after dark in parking lots. Cops be sticking letters in the P.O. box. Watch us say it's P.M. 10 o'clock. Don't trip, but shit is hot. Cause in your palm you got a whole gram of pot. Jaywalking is a crime, but we care not. Montgomery peeps, we walk these mean streets. The elderly asleep, so we creep from Garden Street to Beach. Yo, try to step to this city of the Dutch. Don't expect to touch us or get rushed to Northern Duchess and released on crutches. In this hood we'd be chillin' with the crystal shown up, which in this beach means picturesque lake style. This ghetto's been around a while. So many people died, we got a graveyard of half a mile. On the bench, illin'. Hacky sack attacker keeps his willin'. Killin' yuppies, first they think it's nice. Then get stabbed and sliced by the overpriced merchandise heist. Venture out of residential and get jumped for every
Bradbury essential.
Lost in antique shop front stencils. They be stealing mad presidentials. Sinking in this concrete quagmire, that's right. Some cats escaped the plight and took the turnpike. But to me the city sights gets darker every night. I break the speed limit on my bike.
Believe it.
Yo, those fucking yuppies stole my book.
R to the H, the I, the N, the E. In Crimebeck, you best step carefully. Idle by the Beekman Arms, then cross the street. Cause yo, cakes from Calico be rotten mad teeth.
Wow. That was wonderful. Bravo. Bravo, High School Nick. Bravo, College Nick.
We be jaywalking.
High School Martin, College Nick.
Yeah, college. I want to stress that was probably first year of college. I don't want to. I wish that was earlier than it was. But yeah, so Calico's a bakery.
Yes.
They sell sweets.
And then Beekman Arms is mentioned.
Beekman Arms is a historic old.
Historic, one of the oldest.
It's a thing, it's a landmark.
Yeah, it's landmark. It's
Crystal Lake is a big lake.
Okay.
Crystal Lake. What else? Oh, yeah. So my brother literally actually had a book stolen from him by a yuppie. We don't know if it's a yuppie, but one can assume.
Did you not consider yourselves yuppies?
I still don't. But okay. I mean, I don't.
See, that's the thing. It's exactly.
It's hard to be a yuppie.
We're old enough to be able to like talk about yuppies.
Well,
like yuppies were the pretty hipsters.
Also, if you're 18 and you know you're like on the bench, sitting on the bench, like, yeah, if you're, you know, I mean, it's hard to be a yuppie when you're not a professional.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly wasn't a yuppie at the time, at least.
I get what you're saying. I guess I was just trying to call out the nature of terminologies as
Elon,
we're
you're from Woodstock. I know that you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I am from Yuppie Central. Woodstock is
people,
no
tourists,
is no different than Rhinebeck in terms of
tourists come
that.
In, man. Bradbury, it was a Ray Bradbury book.
Okay.
That was a fallen soldier. Somebody jacked it.
Fuck that shit. Imagine that.
Rhinebeck's rough.
The days when you got a book stolen versus that of a technological device.
I know.
As opposed to an... Why did I call it a technological device? Something
very
that's,
vague.
Yes, exactly. It could be anything.
It's a pacemaker. It's hot on these streets, man. He'll be stealing my books. They be taking your shoelaces. You can barely get home. Your socks and shoes are just slipping off your feet.
What's that sample? I wanted to ask you.
What sample?
The piano sample.
I don't know for sure. I think it might be from Mr. Rogers.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's my guess.
So that's a deep cut.
Well, yeah, dude. I mean, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Dude.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think that's exactly what I was going for, yeah.
For sure.
You're trying for two more tracks, and that will round off with the tracks that you gave us. For full disclosure, you have a lot of interest in politics on the left side of things. That's a fair point to make.
Sure, yeah.
It's not unusual.
I'm not offended by that.
No, it's not an unusual thing to be raised in a liberal bubble, I suppose, if you want to call it. Although I wouldn't say Dutchess County was so liberal as opposed to Ulster, but that said, right. You had a very liberal upbringing.
Yeah, absolutely.
The track One Vial, One Canister, One Crate is has some kind of political influence in so much as that you were sort of protesting the war in Iraq.
It wasn't really a protest. It was just like...
Sure. I don't know why I used the word protest. Protest is thrown around so vaguely these days.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, it was definitely not in support of the war, put it that way. But I mean, it was like during that time, it was like right after 9/11. It was like a year later, maybe. There was a lot of like drumming up of, you know, it was the whole Colin Powell with a vial at the UN and, you know, all this evidence and such, being like WMDs. War, danger. And the samples of George W. Bush, he was giving a speech, but he was saying, like, one vial, one canister, one crate, as in, like, all you need is one of these, and that's the end of the world. So we got to take his dude out. And then later on, there's another sample. I mean, I don't know. I wish this is another one where I wish the quality was better. But, I mean, that's all. You'll get the idea. It was a dystopian time, much like today.
Let's take a listen to this track, then. You know, after listening to it, a fresh perspective. Shall we say? We need it these days.
Not always our own.
I dig it, and I apologize for front selling it like there was more of a protest nature to it.
Well, it was. I mean, you're right. I mean, it was one of many Jersey people. There was one where he's like pardoning a turkey. He's a lot like, you know, Trump too. Like, I've been doing some hip hop tracks recently with Trump. It's just like everything that comes out of his mouth is, you know, unfortunately, sampleable.
Right.
So sampleable. It was just like,
that's
oh
a perfect, that's
God,
a perfect way to
so
put
much,
it
so much yeah. fodder. But yeah, and also like the clap, you know, obviously you could hear like the percussion was people clapping at his talk and stuff. Yeah, so I don't know, it was just ruminations. Topical ruminations.
I feel like we're kind of going through a little bit of history repeating, but yeah. Like, but worse.
No, I saw this interview with Al Gore, and he was saying how like he was going through these phases, like he felt like he was having a PTSD from like the early years of the Bush-Cheney White House, and it feels like that sometimes, except it's even more fucking crazy.
It's the pendulum swinging, in my opinion. It's always the case where you find yourself in a place in time where we're going through history, and then we go one way, and then we go back the other way, and then we go back the other way, and every time we go back one way, it gets more and more radical and extreme.
Right.
Yeah. It's like when you're the X-Men and you're fighting Magneto.
Getting back to
you're like Magneto. You're like, oh, he's pretty bad. Yeah. But then Apocalypse comes around, and you're like, oh.
Where does Omega Red stand though? Is he more ruthless or less ruthless? You know, compared to Magneto and Apocalypse.
Well, they all have their own agendas, man.
Yes,
like Apocalypse wants to enslave all of mankind.
Yep.
Magneto is like in that Malcolm X way, where he's all about mutant rights. So he wants to just down with humans, up with mutants. And then I want to say that Omega Red is about Russia. He's the Russian super weapon.
So what you're saying
is he's like Captain America for Russia.
Okay. Oh. So what you're saying is that Putin
Omega Orange.
Putin is Omega Red, and number 45 would be Apocalypse.
Number 45.
That's what Lawrence Fishburne calls him, and that's what I'm going to call him if I have to refer him to.
I see.
That's the name.
He doesn't get it to fucking get you know his funny? Name is you, uttered. My concern.
When you say that, when you said like number 45, I'm just thinking that's so close to number 47, and 47 is the hit.
I think
it's the video game.
So
number 47.
So according, I'll rattle this quickly on an interview with Lawrence Fishburne on The Daily Show. Evidently, 45 is slang for penis, which would probably be the case in South Africa. In South Africa.
African. Wow.
South Africa, like in some language of South Africa?
I guess, no, it's just like the clue. This one,
like in
this,
English?
This won't make
term,
it to air.
Like we say 45?
In Afrikaan, probably. I don't know. Like number, like 45 is just
the
slang.
The number.
Term.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it was just a joke. It should be
that
a joke.
Sounds like it's probably true.
It was I hope it's true.
We got to find out what language it is, though, so we can start dropping that.
Dude, we shouldn't run over, though.
We got to go. We got to go. And Nick, we will definitely have to have you back, hopefully with your brother. And before we go, we do want
to,
as on our way out, we will play this track. I did want to get to this because of what you are involved in doing now. You do a lot of geospatial landscaping and whatnot, basically urban planning.
It's environmental urban planning.
And is there somewhere like where people could see your work?
Yeah, there's a lot of it. There's a certain amount of it online at nzimmerman-zimmerman.com.
Okay. Definitely check that out.
It's not always up to date, but
it's something's there though.
Some stuff.
My website's not up to date. Yours is probably much more ample with much more stuff.
It's a work in progress.
And then you also have a SoundCloud as well for some of your tracks.
Yep, I have a SoundCloud. I produce under the name Mokra, MOGKRA, and it's soundcloud.com/Mokra.
We're going to end the show with a track of yours called Great Conveyor Belt, which is about the environment, and it's not something we should ever take for granted, but it is something that still is very much important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, abrupt climate change. It's real.
It is real. It says the vocal sample is saying environmental decline, and you know, we have gotten nowhere in terms of sanity with where we stand with it, with climate change.
Yeah, this was from 2004 or 3 or 4, so you know, 13, 14 years later.
Look how far we've come.
Yeah,
but look how far you've come, though, Nick.
That was so sad. You look like a human. You look like a human mouse there. But, you look like Fievel when you said that.
Somewhere out there, Nick. Yeah, but you have gotten somewhere. You have gotten really far, and it's really incredible to hear the kind of sounds you were making in college. And we'll look forward to having you back here on the show to talk more about stuff that you got, as well as Martin, for sure.
Thanks, man, and I appreciate, you know, the outlet to play some of this stuff.
Yeah, man, thanks a lot for coming on.
This is Lost and Rewound every Thursday at 3 p.m. My name's Alon.
And my name is not Alon.
Not Jimmy and not Alon, signing off for this week of Lost and Rewound, Radio Free Brooklyn. Getting a call
at the studio. Stop saying, stop being so friendly.
Hello, this is Radio Free Brooklyn.
You won.
You're the 50th caller.
Do we use CDs? Yes.
Am I on the air? Am I on the air right now?
There are turntables and there are CDs.
In my life?
Yes. Yes. Definitely. Yeah, you should definitely reach out to Radio Free Brooklyn, the main email. Yeah, definitely do that. You should reach out to them by email. We're open on the weekends. Yes.
It sounds like he's like 100 years old.
Nice day. You operate on Sundays? Even Sunday mornings?
Awesome.
Not church.
John.
My daughter said she tried to come by, but she couldn't reach you guys.
Excuse me? Know. Yes. Yes, we are.
This is right. This has never happened. This is right.
It's okay.
I hope this happens mid-show. And, like, we just add it into the show.
There's a lot of stations like that, internet radio. There's, there's a number of them that just stream over
Holy
the internet.
Crap.
For sure. Radio Free Brooklyn is definitely one of them that is of the best positioning in this market, and I wish I could tell you more about it. I feel like I'm not the right person to talk to representing the station. We do a show about old audio from the 80s, 90s, aughts.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, great. That's correct. Yes. Yes, we are. Correct. Yeah. You're most welcome. Have a great rest of your day. You too, John. Bye-bye. Literally never happened before.
It's... Dude, you were the nicest guy in the world. I would have been like, you know what, Johnny? You know what, Johnny boy? I gotta get off the phone. I got radio stations to run. I got babies to kiss. But you entertained that guy like he was... I'm not that nice to my own grandfather.